Hi, it's Dave. Today I'm joined by Gary Black for the second time on my channel. Gary is the managing partner of the Future Fund, an actively managed ETF launched at the end of August, ticker fund FFND. And Tesla makes up 7.8% of their fund, and Tesla is also their top position. Welcome back on the show, Gary. How are you doing?
Thanks, Dave. Doing well.
Great. Yeah, I wanted to touch bases again and go over the earnings report, but also Tesla stock price. Let's start with the stock price here. Tesla over the past 2 years has been on a, or 2 months has been on a complete tear. We were just in the 600s 2 months ago, and now we're almost at $900 as of today. What's going on? Is this surprising you? What kind of forces, you know, behind the scenes are you seeing that's causing the stock rise?
Sure. Well, I think part of this is the same setup we saw in 2019 where, you know, they were basically going to add double capacity. They had a new product coming out, Model Y. And that, of course, we know what happened in 2020. The stock went to the moon. I think it's a similar backdrop. You know, they're doubling capacity again with Berlin and Austin. They have Model Y going to Europe, which expands their TAM. We have Cybertruck coming out next year, which will expand the TAM. So, you know, as a backdrop, you see the, and we could talk about what happened specifically that changed. You see portfolio managers suddenly saying, wow, I've been underweight Tesla all year. That's worked for me. But suddenly Tesla's outperforming, you know, all the other mega cap stocks. And so they're kind of running very fast because they don't want to get left behind as, you know, the last 2 months of the year. You know, with portfolio managers, most of their comp comes in the form of performance bonus based on how their performance is. So what specifically has changed in the last, you know, 2 or 3 months, you had the big second quarter earnings back in July, which, you know, again, was a blowout number. That started it. But then, you know, a couple things happened. One, you got a really good China report in September. So Tesla had about an 18.8% share in September, which surprised everybody. Even though they shouldn't have been, because, you know, when we saw the third quarter numbers for Tesla, they were pretty good. China had to be good. So that was one point. Second, I think, you know, people were saying, well, Ford and GM and Volkswagen are all having chip shortage issues. Tesla's got to have it. And when there were no chip shortages, because Tesla's a little bit different animal, they have long-term contracts. They're viewed as a strategic partner by a lot of suppliers because they're growing so rapidly. Tesla clearly didn't have some of the issues that some of the other legacy automakers had. And then the third thing, which you know, you heard Zach reference this in the call last night, EV adoption is soaring. And, you know, it's been kind of picking up, but globally it was about 3% in 2020. It'll probably be about 5.5% this year, so almost a double. You know, we're forecasting 8% next year, but I think it's going to be closer to 10. And you saw that German EV adoption's up to 17% from low single digit last year. But the big one was China. And China EV adoption hit 17.5% in September. That's up from 5 years ago. So when you start going through these numbers, and this is what, you know, analysts and portfolio managers do, we've all assumed that EV adoption would go up, you know, up to about 25% or so by 2025. And that's about 40 to 50% compound growth rate. But it could be much faster. And I will bet that the EV adoption is really going to start to accelerate, particularly if you get an EV credit in the U.S. later this year. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what's changed. The other thing that's changed is a lot of portfolio managers are looking at other growth stocks like Apple, Amazon, Google, Facebook, Microsoft. If you're a growth manager, they make up about 40% of your benchmark. And all of them have a little bit of hair. The only one that's really kind of doing well is Google. And, you know, they're underweight those stocks. So they're looking at their universe and saying, okay, how am I going to outperform the rest of the year? And I think what's happened is because Tesla, they were underweighted, now they're market weighted. You know, that's where the incremental buying's been coming from the professional money manager the last couple of weeks.
Give us some kind of behind the scenes insight on these portfolio managers. Like how is their pay structured, and how does that factor into kind of, you know, them wanting to catch up, you know, in terms of their performance.
Well, it's one of the greatest jobs in the world to be a portfolio manager at a, you know, Fidelity, a T. Rowe Price, you know, a lot of these guys that own Tesla. Because what happens is there's an analyst team, usually there's somebody or maybe two people covering EVs, and they literally will present to the portfolio managers. They'll give them decks and models and things, and the portfolio manager will make a decision. Do they want to own it? Do they not want to own it? And they, you know, they're there usually early, you know, an hour or two before the market. But a lot of them go home you know, reasonable hour, and it's a really good job, and it's a well-paying job. But it's stressful because you're paid on performance. Most portfolio managers get paid a base salary. It's kind of nominal. You know, it might be $200,000 to $500,000 a year. That's a lot, but you know, they could really make 10 to 15 times that based on the performance. So I used to be a CIO at Janus, and you know, you'd pay a portfolio manager, if you think about a grid, you know, there's a performance grid, and it's relative to a benchmark or relative to a peer group. So if you're in a large cap growth peer group, you know, it might be top decile, 10 to 25th percentile, 25th to 50, and then bottom half. And you'd have a multiple of your base salary there. And then AUM, assets under management, is another multiplier. And so literally at the end of each quarter, they can see how much money they make. So because base salary is such a small part of that number, performance, every basis point matters. Going back to earlier this year, you know, Tesla peaked at $900 back in late January. And then it underperformed from literally January till about July. And when the second quarter earnings report came out, it was a blowout earnings. That's when Tesla really started to outperform. So if you look at the second quarter report to today, Tesla's up about 30%. And Russell 1000 growth, which is the benchmark a lot of these guys use, is literally flat. So, you know, they've been losing ground because they haven't owned enough Tesla, just for the weight, so you know what they are. In Russell 1000 growth, Tesla's about a 3% weight. So if you're only holding 1.5, you're getting hurt. S&P 500, it's about 1.8. And most managers that are benchmarked against the S&P don't own Tesla. And the reason is because it looks expensive. It looks expensive relative to Ford and GM and, you know, anything else that's in the S&P 500. So, you know, people make jokes, well, Warren Buffett should own Tesla. He's not going to own Tesla. He's 91 years old. In his lifetime, he's not going to get comfortable with the valuation. It's just not the way he's wired. And most core managers are not going to get comfortable owning Tesla. But a growth manager who owns it at 1.5 weight could easily go to 3 or even 4.5. And one of the things that happened after hours today, which will be interesting to watch tomorrow, Snap missed. Snap is down 23% after hours. Because when you buy an Apple iPhone now, you literally have to opt in to be able to track the ads. And since most people don't want to do that, you can't really track the effectiveness of ads. But that's not just true on Snap. It's true on Google. It's true on Twitter. It's true on Pinterest. So the whole market's going to be down at least, you know, 50 basis points to 1% tomorrow. And a lot of these classic growth names that everybody owns, Google, Facebook, Twitter, are going to be down a lot. I see Google was down 3 or 4% after hours today.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm wondering, how are you tracking like the underweight kind of status of these different portfolio managers? Is there some type of reports you're getting?
Yeah, you can't find it on the internet. You got to pay a broker. So we pay brokers for, you know, commissions. And look, this is the way the business works. They supply you with research. So, you know, we might have Morgan Stanley or Goldman or Jefferies or Bank of America Research. And they literally give it to you for free, but in return, they want you to trade with them. And so, you know, we could ask them for special requests and say, hey, can you tell us, you know, on an aggregate basis, they're not going to give it individually, what is Tesla's weight in your biggest clients? Because they can see that, or at least they have a feel for it. What is the weight versus the benchmark? And they'll do that for you. They'll tell you. And a lot of them will just put out this type of research, you know, and you can just see it. But what's nice about if you're a money manager, professional money manager, you can get a lot of research for quote unquote free that you can't get on the internet. We follow a company called Celsius. It's energy drinks, and we own it. And you can see Nielsen data because the broker puts it out. But again, you have to pay for it. The way you pay for it is you trade with them.
Mm-hmm. Got it. You tweeted a while back, you said, or actually recently, rising estimates and price targets will push Tesla to $1,000 in the next few months as PMs, portfolio managers, who are underweight Tesla go to market weight. So again, this is what you're saying right now is you see people who are underweight earlier this year. Do you think the earnings, the higher quality earnings are also kind of appealing to some of these more conservative PMs out there? They're starting to see growing profits, growing cash flows, and it's becoming less of a risky kind of stock for them?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple questions to that. I mean, one big thing you're seeing is estimates are going up very sharply. And so that's something that portfolio managers like. And the reason they like that is because, take Tesla, the earnings for 2021 now, the estimates have suddenly popped in the last day. They were at about 540 for the year, and now they're 610. So that's up about 13%. 2022, which is more important because that you're kind of getting into, we're a month and a half away from 2022. The earnings have popped from about 740 yesterday. I think they're about 810 right now, so about 10%. And so the reason that's important is because a lot of portfolio managers aren't, I hate to say this, they're not doing DCFs going out 10 years, discounting it back. They're using shorthand, they're using PE ratios and saying, okay, well, if earnings go up, let's say 10%, holding the multiple constant, meaning I assume the growth rate's going to be the same as it was, the stock should be up 10%. Okay. And so the stock was up today, you know, give or take 3%, which we were happily wrong. We thought that this would be another quarter sell on the news. It was selling the news for about 3 minutes and the stock turned around again. Mm-hmm. Happy about that because it's our largest position, as you said. Mm-hmm. But I think what's happening is portfolio managers are looking at Tesla now and saying, wow, China's no longer a problem. It never really was. It was just the way the schedule works, that for the first month they export out, the second month it's 50-50, the third month's all local. There was just a misconception about that in China. And of course you had some bad press, which the media made a big deal of. And now you look at China, and China is very strong. The September number was a record. The third quarter number was a record, even when you back out the exports. And everybody knows, or everybody should know, a lot of the shorts don't realize this, that China is now taken from the U.S. China, U.S. was the one shipping to China, and now with Shanghai becoming the export hub, you heard that on the conference call yesterday, there's still a lot of Model 3 and Model Y being shipped now to Europe. And so I keep going back and saying, okay, forget Model 3 because Berlin's not going to make Model 3. Well, maybe they will ultimately. It'll be a hatchback, but let's take that out for now. You take the Model Y exports back out, and you say they're going to come back to China next year where they have a six-month wait for a Model Y in China. That's going to be huge for China. And the China demand is – this whole demand fiction that demand is slipping in China, it's a lie, right? Because, as you know, they settle the export needs first and they back into the domestic production. So there are lots of people on Twitter saying demand in China is falling. It's not. So back to your question, I think a lot of portfolio managers finally realized – after those September numbers came out, the September China numbers, and after the third quarter volume numbers came out, the China is no longer an issue. The chip shortage is no longer an issue. And because I can't find anything I like, because Facebook has hair, you know, tomorrow Google's going to have hair. Amazon volume growth, revenue growth is down into the low teens. It's never been this low. I think people are trying to find other names that are going to do well. And Tesla, look, Tesla is doing everything well. Right. The only thing negative about Tesla, you know, is that the pricing that they took, it didn't all flow through. FSD is the FSD take rate's been falling. And people worry, will Tesla have some of these, you know, supply disruption issues that have hurt the other manufacturers? I don't see it, but people worry about stuff like that. But Tesla looks really good from here because it's delivering 50% volume growth. It'll deliver, you know, I don't know what the number is, $10 next year and so forth. It'll deliver about 40-50% earnings growth next year over this year, and more than that, because it'll be $6 this year. It'll be a 60% earnings growth for next year. And there's nobody out there in the mega cap space delivering 50-55% volume growth, selling it, you know, let's call it 80 times next year's earnings, because we're using $10. That is really, really cheap, mm-hmm. You know, and there's nothing else out there.
Yeah.
No alternative, as they say, Tina.
Q3 earnings. So yesterday we had, you know, really, really strong earnings. What stuck out in Q3 earnings? What were the key kind of numbers or, you know, metrics that you're kind of tracking?
Yeah. Well, look, start at the top. So they delivered $1.86 versus the consensus was about $1.70. We always use non-GAAP. We don't look at GAAP earnings because we, you know, we add back the stock compensation. We add back the Bitcoin charge because it's not relevant. It's one time. We hope it's one time. And look, Bitcoin has rallied, so yeah. You're not going to see that again next quarter. So that's 4 cents. So the real number was $1.90 versus $1.70. So that's a good beat. Some people made light of the fact that, you know, the revenue was just kind of in line. Part of it was reg credits. Reg credits were 279. The street was looking for more, about 390 million of rent credits. So that's point one. That explained the revenue shortfall, if there was one. There really wasn't. I think what everybody got excited, including us, was the automotive gross margin. We back out the ZEV credit. It was 28.8. The street was looking for about 26. We were at about 26.7. So it was a nice beat. And again, it reflects when you're making, you know, two or delivering and producing, let's say 240,000 units versus say 200, you're leveraging your fixed manufacturing costs, you know, the cost of the line, the depreciation, you know, the manufacturing labor, if you will. So your margin is going to be higher. And look, one of the things that I got out of the call last night, which I thought the call was boring, but I thought it was highly useful. So hats off to Elon for delegating this one. So it allowed him, you know, to free up some of his time, which I thought was a great exercise. I think one of the things I learned on the call was how Zach, as the CFO, thought about pricing relative to cost. And so, you know, he went to great pains to explain, look, we've taken a lot of pricing. And when we think about pricing, we try to match it up with, we have contracts, and he mentioned aluminum and nickel, the cost has gone up, but we have these contracts that will expire next year. And we try to match up taking pricing now, knowing the cars aren't going to get delivered for 6 months, you know, if somebody orders one, and we know these contracts are expiring maybe in 6 months, and we're going to have an increase at that point. And just that whole complex way of thinking, I thought was very helpful for me to understand it. It's not just this haphazard random way of taking pricing. They're actually thinking through their cost increases. So bottom line is, when you look at gross margin expansion, you know, you saw it for third quarter, you'll probably see some more for fourth quarter, because with 6 month waits, and Tesla's the only one that's got 6 month waits, you can take a lot of pricing. And so I think that this ability to match pricing with cost increases is very unique in the industry. You just don't see that. And I think cost will go up, pricing will go up, gross margin should continue to move up slowly, not a lot, but slowly. And then one of the reasons, the other thing that we thought was interesting was ASP. ASP was actually flat. If you look at third quarter to second quarter, it's about 48,800 ASP, which was down, as you saw in the release, about 6%. A lot of people thought it was going to be way up, you know, the people who were expecting $2 in earnings. It was flat because, again, more model Ys, the base version being sold in China, more Model 3 and more Model Y in general being sold. And the FSD take rate probably dropped at least 3 or 4 percentage points, because they're offering a subscription price. And a lot of people said, okay, let me try it. I don't think it's going to be a big deal one way or another at the end of the day. Once FSD gets to level 4, which will happen in a couple of years, the take rate will go up. But for now, the take rate's still pretty low. Mm-hmm. So that's what's causing the ASP to be low. The tax rate was low. As you mentioned, the reg credits. Reg credits were a lot lower than people thought, and they were a lot lower than they were in the second quarter. But to me, that's quality of earnings. That's good, right? Because that means you're not dependent on reg credits to make your numbers. And the tax, as I said, the tax rate was low, and the SG&A was about where we thought it would be. So all in all, I thought it was a very solid quarter. I thought that they don't guide, but you know, the verbiage they used during the conference call wasn't particularly ominous. It made me believe that they could take pricing to offset any cost increases. I think that they'll finish the year pretty close to about 900,000 deliveries. And I think the big debate in the industry is, okay, next year you got a lot of new products coming out, and competitors have changed their strategy. They're no longer trying to introduce brand new products. Now they're going right at their core franchise. Think about Ford F-150, EV. Porsche Macan, EV. Okay, as opposed to coming up with silly little new names like e-tron and EQS and ID3, ID4, that it's hard to get brand traction, but when you use an existing brand name, you can do it much quicker. So the real debate in the industry, and this is what you have to decide if you want to own the stock, do you think that the new competition will cause Tesla to lose EV share? Because everybody agrees EV adoption is going up much faster than people thought, but the real debate is, will Tesla be able to hold its share within the EV space? And I think it will, because of TAM, okay, total addressable market. So you're bringing Model Y to the EU, and that's 40% of the business in the EU is the baby SUV, the CUVs as they call them. we've heard that the Model 3 will come there, and I don't know if it's going to get exported from China, maybe, but it'll be a hatchback, which Europeans like. Cybertruck at some point will get introduced to the U.S. There's 2 million pre-orders. I don't know how many they could make in Austin. Let's call it, you know, at capacity 250 a year. That expands TAM. So, and at some point, we bring out Tesla brings out a compact, you know, a $25,000 car made in China, maybe made in India, maybe made everywhere. But that gets them into the sub $25,000 segment. Mm-hmm. And all that expands TAM. So when I add it all up and I start trying to forecast out a few years, I'm coming up with by 2025, EV adoption is about 25%. I'm coming up with Tesla holding its share at about 24, 25. I'm coming up with about $34 in earnings. I put a 50p on it, which is still a lot less than where we are today. And I get $1,700, which is worth about $1,200 today. So I'm still very bullish about the stock. You know, again, I thought we were going to see a little bit of give back today. I was wrong, and I'm happy I was wrong. But I back to your original question, $1,000 by the end of the year, I think is likely.
Yeah. I notice you, a lot of times you refer to this whole growing EV market and Tesla's, you know, ability to maintain their market share. I wonder, and I hope you don't mind kind of a little bit of pushback here, but it seems like Tesla doesn't really look at it that way. It seems like for Tesla, they don't really distinguish between EV or IC. They're looking for a market segment. Let's say it's the BMW 3 Series, that entry-level compact sports sedan. And they go after that market segment to be first place, to make the best product possible, right? So there's no, I guess, competition. They're the top. Every segment they enter, they're the top. And so one of my concerns with looking at just or focusing on the EV kind of adoption and market shares, you might have some markets like China where you have a $5,000, you know, like EV that just takes the market by storm, but maybe isn't really a sustainable, you know, vehicle for many. And it just kind of tilts, you know, the whole numbers and Tesla's percent, right, of that market. Versus why not just look at the segments that Tesla is in right now and then kind of apply that to other segments, you know, and apply maybe just a 50% growth rate, you know, that Tesla's guiding for. Why not take that approach rather than, you know, focusing on this whole EV total addressable market for that?
When you go to France, you got to try to speak French. When you go to China, you got to try to speak Chinese. This is the language of the portfolio management, you know, world. And it's really the same thing, Dave. I mean, people get very focused on this, but when you take EV adoption times EV share, you get share. That's math, okay? So if EV adoption is, let's say it's 5%, and if you take Tesla's share, you know, which is 1%, that'd be a half of a share point. You go up to 2025, EV adoption is 25%, and Tesla's EV share is 25%. I'm trying to keep the math simple. That means Tesla has a 6% share. And we can do that in every market. And we can talk that language. And look, from a management standpoint, that's how they should be running their business, okay? I would do the same thing. But from a stock standpoint, which is very different, you know, the investment controversy is not will they grow share. Everybody knows they're going to grow share. Because if EV adoption grows up at 50% a year, their overall market share is going to grow at, you know, some number close to 50%. But the debate in the investment industry is, will they be able to hold their EV share? And I'm taking the view that they will. They have so far. Their EV share keeps growing. And you know where everybody's looking? People are watching China and people are watching the U.S. And so to your point, when Tesla thinks about running his business, they really shouldn't think too much about the stock price. They should just think about, you know, are we taking market share from everybody else? And that's how they should run their business. But me as a dumb portfolio manager, I'm trying to think, okay, where is Tesla going to beat expectations so the stock price can keep going up? Mm-hmm. And so you got into this year, you know, the stock price went down because Tesla, you know, didn't until July beat expectations. I don't know if you remember, it was, I think it was first quarter that they missed, rare miss for Tesla. And, you know, then second quarter they beat, third quarter they beat. They got to beat expectations. And if they can beat expectations, and it's just all math. EV adoption times EV share equals share. You can talk and share. It's the same thing. But you can't expect it to say, okay, if overall share goes up, you know, let's say it's 30% a year, stock's going down, right? It's too low a bar.
Got it.
Because
got
the adoption is soaring. Mm-hmm. But it's a good question. People ask me that all the time, and I say, don't get worried about that. Tesla's going to run its business the way it's going to run its business. It's not going to, if it grows its overall share, at least by 50% a year, stock's going higher.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about the EV tax credit. What do you think are the chances of it passing, and what kind of impact do you think it would have on Tesla? Is it a big deal that this EV tax credit, you know, can pass? Yeah, what's your take?
I take the view it's a big positive because right now they get nothing, right? So I don't get too caught up in $8,000 versus $12,500 if it's union made. I've never seen a revenue enhancer passed. Revenue being, you know, somebody getting a tax credit if they buy a product that's union made. I've just never seen it. Maybe it's happened. I can't find one. And I talked to a lot of people in Washington. You know, Republicans hate it. Manchin, you know, he hasn't really weighed in on it. You know, he seems to be the swing vote in the Senate, you know, as a Democrat. But I don't, you know, they're looking for money. And so, you know, to answer your question, I think the EV credit will pass. I think it'll be part of the infrastructure bill. The infrastructure bill, the bid ask right now is $2 billion. That's Manchin's number versus $3 billion, or $3 trillion. $2 trillion versus $3 trillion. And the progressives, it's a new name for liberals, they want $3 trillion. Manchin, who's a more moderate type Democrat, he seems to be the swing vote. So you got to placate him. He's looking for $2 trillion. They're going to look for places to cut money out of this. And look, part of this is just how do they score it? You remember when they originally were talking about it would be a $34 billion hit for the EV credit at 12. That's nonsense. I mean, you and I could do the math and say it's way more than that, right? But, you know, they'll figure out how to kind of make the numbers look better, and they got to get the number down to $2 trillion. So things got to drop out. I don't think, because Biden is very focused on being the clean energy president, this is one of his signatures when he became president. He laid out, you know, four objectives. This was one of the four to really accelerate clean energy. I think at the end of the day, this thing will pass. It'll probably pass consistent with the debt ceiling. The debt ceiling is now set to expire December 3rd because they pushed it back. I think it's going to, you know, they're going to talk about it for the next 3 or 4 weeks. And then I think it'll get passed. And I think it'll be a very close vote in the Senate. But, you know, clean energy is not something that really people object to. It's the spending on all the stuff. So you got to figure out how does EV credit stay in there. And I think it'll stay. And I think it'll be $8,000. I think there'll probably be some income limits. Like if you make more than a certain amount, you won't be able to get it, which is part of, you know, what you saw before. But I don't think the union thing will last because I think, you know, no Republican's going to vote for that. That's just like total anathema to them.
Yeah, I hear you.
It'll pass in December, I think. And look, you know what's also good? If it doesn't pass till December, you're not going to have this, you know, I'm going to push my delivery off until January 1st because everything is going to go into place January 1st. So you still may have some deliveries get pushed off. But my bet is the moment this starts passing, Tesla is going to be much more aggressive at taking pricing.
Yeah.
So there won't be that much of incentive to wait.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you think is the biggest risk for Tesla, the company, over the next, let's say, 1 year? And then let's take another angle. What do you think is the biggest risk for Tesla, the stock price? Because these are completely different animals in a way. Yeah. So yeah, what's your take on that?
Look, I think competitors have woken up, okay? For many years, their whole strategy to EV is don't hurt their core franchise. Again, so you have ID3, ID4, e-tron, EQS. I mean, all these crazy names that have no brand equity, okay? And sometime about 12 months ago, they realized that wasn't working. They weren't really getting much traction. And again, you could look at Tesla EV share to see that. Tesla EV share has grown from about 17% back in 2018 to today it's about 23%. So it keeps growing, but that's the investment controversy. Do you lose EV share? So I think as the competitors all get serious and you see, again, the F-150 EV, the Macan EV, everybody, the SC90, the Volvo, the flagship products bringing out an EV version next year, you know, and their brand equity is safety. And that becomes really important because Tesla has to mean safety. Tesla means, you know, superior range, superior performance, superior technology. It has to mean superior safety because as we get into autonomy, it has to be safe. I think that's the biggest challenge, that, you know, with all these new EV launches, and you throw in Rivian, which is going to be a great product, Lucid, which is probably going to be a great product, although it's expensive. I think, you know, there's a lot of competition coming. And I, again, I believe they can keep their share. That's the biggest thing they got to do right. They got to keep expanding their TAM. I think from a cash flow standpoint, they're going to generate close to $10 billion next year after all their capital spending. They got to be really aggressive if they want to get up to, you know, even my forecast is 5 million units by 2025. I mean, they talk about 20 million units, which would be 25% share of the market. They have to continue to build new gigafactories. And, you know, Elon's been pretty kind of close to vest on that. And I have a theory why. But they really have to get started on getting at least another couple factories up and running pretty soon. I think India is a great place to start, even though they say there's, you know, not that much money. There's enough there to support 500,000 units a year. And I would probably put another one in the UK, another one in the EU, but I'd probably put it in the UK. And I would probably put one in, you know, either Mexico or South America. But and then, you know, you probably have a dedicated factory for the $25,000 car in China. So just like we have, you know, two factories in the U.S., you could have two factories in China. You could have two factories in Europe, probably one in India. But that's where the if they don't, you know, get more gigafactories up, there's no way they're going to get to 5 million units by 2025. They can't. They're at 2 million capacity today with Berlin and Austin coming up. So, and I think the reason he doesn't want to talk about it is people ask him, and he's just close to it. He wants, I believe, that Tesla wants to get to an investment-grade credit by the end of the year. They're really investment-grade today. There's two ratios that the rating agencies look at. They look at fixed charge coverage, so the number of times your interest expense is covered by pre-tax income, and they look at debt to equity and debt to capital on a book basis. You know, on a market basis, it's like zero. It's like 1%. But on a debt to book value of equity, and then you add the debt, so it's debt to capital, they're at about 22, 23% at the end of third quarter. That's investment grade. And their fixed charge coverage is about 18 times. That's investment grade is usually about 6 or 7 times. So I think as long as they don't do anything stupid with the cash, as long as they keep saying, look, we're going to reinvest in the business without getting, you know, too specific. And at the end of third quarter, they had $8 billion of debt. And if you add the Bitcoin, which is about $1.2 billion, they have $19 billion of cash. Again, that type of ratio, $19 billion cash, $8 billion of debt, that would be investment grade in any other shop. So once they become investment grade, then I think that he'll get more specific about it. And I don't think they're sitting still. They know they've got to get to, you know, they got to get moving on getting more gigaplants up and running if they want to get to 20 million units at some point.
Yeah.
By 2030, I guess they said.
Yeah. Are you concerned at all that Elon is seems focused on SpaceX recently a lot more? And I mean, it seems like everything with Tesla is going great. So, I mean, there's nothing to complain about per se, but yeah, how do you view that? Do you think as long as things are going fine with Tesla, he could do whatever, you know, he needs to?
Elon, you and I both know the man is brilliant. I read somewhere that he separates his calendar into 5-minute increments. I mean, I do 30-minute increments, and I thought it was pretty good. So 5-minute increments, like you start to make, okay, time to go, and he moves on to something else. You know, he's been able to manage it so far. I don't worry about SpaceX. Mm-hmm. What I worry about is he gets distracted on things like, and I think you probably disagree with me on this, building restaurants at the charging stations, okay? I don't want him to do that. I want him, he can get licensed to Starbucks and or, you know, charge Starbucks a rental fee or McDonald's. And I don't want him focused on, you know, what he should be serving at his restaurants that are at the charge station. I do want him to be able to monetize that, but I don't want him distracted from the core mission. The core mission is to accelerate, you know, clean energy, accelerate, you know, and I think as long as he's focused on that, that's good. And look, SpaceX, it's out there. It's a personal hobby of his to get to Mars. He's been able to manage it so far. I don't worry about that. I do worry about if you put everything under one umbrella, you'd have a lot of institutional managers like myself not like that, because you're basically taking the profits down, which Tesla makes a lot of profits now. SpaceX does not. I don't know if the Boring Company, I'm sure it doesn't make any money, yeah. Right? If you suddenly put those three or four businesses together, then that's a conglomerate. And, you know, institutional PMs hate conglomerates. They hate them. Yeah. So you would see a big sell-off if they were to ever announce that. So that's food for
thought. Yeah. Yeah. I had that idea because I think long-term, for long-term, you know, Elon, Tesla, SpaceX investor, it kind of makes sense for Elon just to bring them together for simplicity. But I had actually a lot of conversations with just people in the financial field and, you know, fund managers to understand, you know, their perspective. And yeah, it's like unanimously, like, you know, a dislike, you know, they don't want this.
You know what it is, Dave, it's uncertain. You just don't know how much money, you know, SpaceX is going to take. And you really can't forecast demand. With Tesla, it's a very easy model to build. Anybody wants to build a Tesla model, it would take you a weekend, literally, because you forecast, you know, global SAR, you forecast EV adoption by country, you focus share by country, you look at ASP, you look at gross margin, and you got expenses. And it's a very simple model to build. So it's a great investment for somebody like me because I can understand it, I can forecast it, I can see if things are going all right. Every month I can get an update of how things are going in the key markets. You know, the biggest challenge for a portfolio managing Tesla or owning Tesla is the noise, you know, because you see all this media stuff that 90% of it is just BS. I mean, we see this, you know, Misty Cummings being appointed as a special director to NHTSA.
It's like, yeah, special advisor, yeah, to NHTSA.
Yeah, special advisor. And you know it's negative, but does it mean anything? I don't know. I don't want to have to think about it. I don't want to think about if she's got any influence. Mm-hmm. I know she's going to keep her day job. And I saw that Mayor Pete said, hey, Elon, come in and talk to me, which he should do. But nobody wants to deal with the noise of this crazy woman who is now going to be, she's going to have some influence, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm curious with your background in, you know, the whole fund industry, how did you kind of step out of the noise and, you know, the negative kind of criticism of Tesla, especially back in 2019, everyone was just, you know, harping on Tesla as this cash bleeding, you know, company is going to go bankrupt. How did you kind of sort through that and start to kind of figure out that, hey, this is actually a potentially big, you know, cash flowing, cash generating business? Like, when did that happen, that turning point, and what was kind
exactly
of the cause?
I took a test drive of a Model S in Miami, Florida, and it was in early 19. It was probably in the spring of 19. And I said, this is unbelievable. You know, it's just an unbelievable, and I was always a Porsche guy. I had owned Porsches my whole life, my whole adult life. You know, I didn't own crap when I was a kid, but, you know, I owned like Chevy Impalas and hand-me-downs from grandpa and things that I could buy. But my first car that I, when I actually had some money, was a Porsche. And then I owned probably six or seven Porsches. And then I owned a Porsche Cayenne last year. I drove a Tesla Model S, and I said, this is unbelievable. And I just could envision it. You know, it's like, okay, I don't have to go to a gas station. I can just park at my garage and plug it in like I plug my iPhone in. And it's got unbelievable acceleration and all this technology that I couldn't even use. I just thought it was like unbelievable. So I started doing more work on it. And at the time, it was spring of 19. It was terrible. You know, the stock was acting like crap and everybody hated it, to your point. And then I watched it. And this is what portfolio managers do. You find a product and you watch the stock. And then it was third quarter of 19, they beat, and everybody said, wow, these guys are actually maybe going to go profitable. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they start, I think they were talking about the Model Y. I saw the Cybertruck presentation where, you know, they threw the balls at the window and they cracked. And I just thought that's pretty neat because that expands to, because I had a marketing background too. You know, I'd worked at J&J as a product manager on Tylenol. So I understood the whole concept of TAM. And all I kept thinking of was, okay, Model Y, which they were launching in January, this is early 20, was going to get them into the CUV segment, which is 40%. So literally their TAM would triple overnight. And then you throw Cybertruck, it's another 20%. And then I just kept thinking, this thing is going to be a home run as they go into new segments. And I used to talk to David Einhorn a lot. By email. And I should say, but you don't understand TAM. When you triple your TAM, you know, the stock has to go up, you know, even if you get a little bit of share. So that's what got me excited. I test drove one, I built the model, and then I saw that third quarter number, which was a blowout number. And I said, this thing's going to go profitable. And then it's going to be, the rest is going to be history. And that's how I got into it.
Wow, that's fascinating, because at Q3 2019, I remember that quarter, because I'm like, this is the turning point, you know, everything changes, you know, like Tesla turns a profit and it's just going to get better and better, because as they produce and sell more cars, right, they're going to get their operating leverage is going to kick in. They're going to start to show actually profits. But that's so interesting. The car and then the quarter.
2018 and 19, you must have been like in pain.
Yeah, I have high pain tolerance, you know. But I wrote something, you know, in 18, also 19. I was always active on these online forums for Tesla and investing. But it was obvious as long as they could actually mass produce this Model 3 and overcome this and produce it at decent margins, then they can just add on the Model Y and new segments.
Just leverage the brand.
Exactly. The brand. Yeah, definitely.
And that was the brilliant thing that I'm sure there was a lot of discussion about it, to go down, you know, down in value and go from, you know, the Model S and Model X, which are, you know, 80 to 100,000, to a Model 3, which was, you know, 35, 40. I mean, to me, that makes sense, because you're expanding your TAM, and your TAM gets bigger at the bottom. And so it's a similar discussion as you think about a Tesla Compact. It's going to cannibalize your more expensive product, but it's going to dramatically expand your TAM. And then it's lights out for the rest of the industry. If they can deliver a $25,000 car with performance that's like the Model 3, and you can just plug it in your garage, and, you know, it looks nice, I just think it's lights out for the industry if they don't move fast. That's why it's interesting watching Diesel Volkswagen. You know, he's trying to light a fire under, you know, both his board and his employees. But, you know, it is kabuki theater. And I say that term all the time, because they just it's like so much for show. And I don't see a lot of, you know, action that's getting them to be competitive with Tesla. You know, I think Rivian's going to be more successful, because Rivian's at least got the, you know, now they got the pickup truck, but they're going to launch an SUV next year. And to me, that's more competition than, you know, GM or Ford or most of VW.
Yeah. I mean, it reminds me, like, when Tesla announced the Model 3, a lot of people thought, oh, this is going to be some economy car, you know, it's going to be like some cheap car. And they didn't realize this is actually going to be like a luxury, like entry level, at least. Exactly. It's going to be that. Like, it's going to be a luxury car in that sense. And I think with the $25,000 car, a lot of people think, oh, it's just going to be some cheap car, you know? But I don't think they realize this is Tesla. Tesla does not make, you know, these cheap economy kind of Corolla type of cars, you know? It's going to be a nice car. And
raise the bar.
Exactly. That's something I think people, a lot of people just have to see it and drive it. And it's just going to have to happen for people to understand, I think, the tidal wave of change that's going to come. Yeah.
Well, that would be something, again, as a portfolio manager, let's suppose you get more portfolios interested in Tesla as they grow into their multiple, right? If you get everybody believing that Tesla's going to earn at least 10 bucks next year, the stock's at, you know, let's call it 900, that's 80, 90 times. That's not bad, okay? Especially if it's growing at 50, 55% a year. That's a 1.5, 1.6. The S&P has a PEG, you know, just PE divided by G, of about 2.8. Apple's about 2.8. Microsoft's about 2.7. Tesla's at 1.6. So Tesla looks insanely cheap if you believe that it's going to earn 10 bucks in 2022. And so I think what you got to get people to believe is that as they go further down, they're not going to cannibalize themselves. They're going to expand their TAM. That's point one. Mm-hmm. Point two, that they're going to take all their cash flow, because they're going to generate 10 billion in cash flow next year, and they're going to reinvest it in the business, and they're not going to go out and do something dumb with it again. And pay down debt is good. Get mm-hmm. investment grade, and, you know, put money back into the business. I wouldn't pay a dividend. I think dividends lock you in. If they have excess cash, they could always buy back stock if they want to when it gets, you know, smacked around because of, you know, some bad PR, which is always okay to do. But don't go spending it on dumb things. And if you could put it back in the business, professional money managers will say, I trust this guy.
Yeah. I mean, dumb things. What dumb things are you thinking about?
Let's not go there today. Let's just say it. I mean, Bitcoin's been, for somebody who wants to own Bitcoin, I have no problem. I take the Jamie Dimon approach.
Got it.
You know, Jamie Dimon says, I think it's worthless, but my clients want it, so I'm going to offer it. I've, you know, gotten comfortable with them owning $1.3 billion, $1.4 billion. They haven't increased it. If they want to accept it as currency for EVs, that's great. I love that. It's a very small part of business. People don't realize this, even though it's up, let's call it, it's a double, it's only $1 a share, right? Yeah. It's not like it doesn't go into recurring earnings. People back it out, just like they backed out the charge. So even if it doubles again, you're adding $1 or $2 to Tesla, because they don't own a lot. They own $1 billion. Yeah. $1.3 billion
yeah.
out of, you know, market cap that's, you know, $870 billion or something. Yeah. So it's okay. Yeah. I don't mind it.
But Gary, there's so many crypto coins out there. You have Ethereum and Doge, and there's so many.
Look, here's another principle of finance that most professional money managers view. If I can invest in it myself, you shouldn't be investing it. So cash, they take the view that, look, if you have a lot of excess cash, you should give it back because there's a cost of equity implicit.
Yeah.
Tesla's cost of equity is about 11.6%. If you look on it, you know, their beta is 1.6. You start with a risk-free rate of 2. The excess return you get in an equity versus a 10-year treasury is about 6% historically. So in order for somebody to hold on to cash within a company as risky as Tesla with a beta of 1.6, you got to earn at least 11.6% return. So people like me look at it and say, well, you're not going to get 11.6% return on cash. You should give it back.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Right. Back to me about buying back stock. And I think with Bitcoin, people just, you know, they don't know how to value it. I don't know how to value it. You know, there's no intrinsic cash flow that I could put on it and say, here's what it's worth. It's just, it's like a network value because a lot of people use it. And so look, I have a lot of friends, people close to me that own Bitcoin, that's fine. I just don't think in a corporation, and you only have three companies that invest in it. You got Square, you got MicroStrategy, you got Tesla. It's just not, it's not something that's appropriate in my mind for somebody to hold on to. But because it's so small as a percentage of Tesla, it's kind of rounding error, and I can't, I've made my peace with it.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, Gary, this has been fun. I know it's been just a couple of months since you started the Future Fund. I'm just curious, can you share a quick update on how it's going? Also, like, how is it going personally for you? How is the workload? Are you enjoying, you know, running a managed ETF? I think the ticker, what is FFND, so people can, you know, even follow that. So yeah, what's up with your new fund?
Well, thanks for asking. It's an active ETF. It's concentrated, high conviction. We use 10 megatrends that are, you know, everybody kind of understands the megatrends. It's 24/7 information, entertainment, it's automation, it's climate sustainability. That's the Tesla megatrend. And then we look for names in a very concentrated fashion that can fit those megatrends. And so we use research. I'm an ex-research analyst. And, you know, we try to find interesting, growthy names that are changing the world. And so we launched at the end of August. We're up about 5%. We'll probably get a little bit back tomorrow because of Snap and Google, and we don't own Facebook. But, you know, I think the Russell 3000 growth, which is our benchmark, is only up 1. So we're up about 4% relative to our benchmark and relative to the asset class. And so I think we're doing pretty good as a start. But look, this is every day. It's you got to go out and find new names and make sure you're not blowing people up. And so Tesla is it's almost 8% position now. I have no interest in cutting it back, even though it's moved up. My discipline is, you know, I have to like it better at 650 than I like it better than at 900. But the reality is, I still think it's got, you know, a lot of upside. And what we do, you know, once a week, we look at upside versus downside. And as you know, my price target is 1200 on Tesla. So it's still got, you know, close to 40% upside. And if I think about downside on Tesla, at this point, given where earnings are, where cash flows are, you know, I think maybe it's 800. So I look at it as got, you know, 3-to-1 upside downside. That would rank it pretty near the top. And that's why we keep it as a big position. So thanks for asking. It's doing well. And if you want to put money in, FFND is the ticker.
Awesome. Hey, so do you have some type of internal limit of, for example, if Tesla went up to 10, 15%, 20%, you would cut it down?
We would. I don't know where that number is. Mm. You know, we're not that specific, just like ARK is not that specific about it. It's really a risk management issue. And again, it goes to risk reward. If it went up to 1200, you know, then I don't get new information. People have to understand the way price targets work is you update them when they get new information, if you're doing your job. You don't update them just because, you know, the price has blown past your price target, which a lot of the street does. But if there's, you know, one-to-one risk reward, meaning the stocks at, say, 1,100, and I think it's only got $100 left, and, you know, the downside is 1,000, then we'd be cutting it back. But, you know, even like for this week, we thought, again, wrong, that it would fall back a little because of the last six quarters, you know, it's been sell on the news, and it didn't happen except for about a minute today. I think it opened down and went through the roof,
yeah.
Went to the moon. We didn't even think about really cutting it back because we just felt that it's going to go to 1,200. And so, you know, we would probably cut it back if it hit our price target. But my guess is we're going to get more information. Where I'm going to be wrong on the upside is I think EV adoption is going to continue to accelerate. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the competitors' efforts to grow their EV business are going to, they're going to fail. You know, I just don't see them. It is kabuki theater to me watching what GM and Ford are doing. It's pretend. You know, they're not really doing anything. Whereas like Rivian, I actually think they got a good product. I don't know if they're going to get $80 billion in valuation when they come public, but I think it's going to be a good product. It's worth more than Ford. And I think Lucid's got a good product. I haven't driven one, but, you know, it looks like it's a fine automobile.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll cut it back, but not anytime soon.
Yeah, sounds good. Gary, nice chatting and catching up with you and talking Tesla and the markets. I appreciate it. I'll go ahead and link to your Twitter profile and also to your fun website in the video description. Anywhere else where people can kind of track you and follow what you're doing?
Yeah, LinkedIn, Twitter. Look at the website. The Future Fund is our corporate website. Mm-hmm. Future Fund ETF is the ETF website. And look, we're still a small shop, so anything you do, we're trying to get to 100 million of assets so we can get invited onto some of these bigger platforms, which I told people that helps Tesla, because if we can get more assets because we're on the bigger platform, we'll buy more Tesla stock. So, but yeah, those are the places you find us.
Awesome. All right. Thanks, Gary. We'll talk later again. All right.
Good talking to you. All right. Take care.
Bye.